Hi there, and welcome to Everyday Business with me, Aidan Donnelly. I've been analysing and investing in companies for nearly 30 years, and I'm fascinated by how companies operate, the entrepreneurs who start them, and the business people and managements that run them. In this podcast, I'll be talking to a whole host of people with different stories, backgrounds, and journeys, learning about their businesses and gleaning some insights and lessons from their experience. For those that are listening, don't forget to like, share, and subscribe if you enjoy what you hear. So without further ado to today's episode. Well, believe it or not, Christmas is getting even closer, and my guest today is very focused on that. Jim Barry is Managing Director at Barry Group. The business was founded by his late father in 1955, and under Jim's vision and leadership, it has grown from a once local business to a leading wholesale distribution company. The Barry Group is one of Ireland's leading retail food and alcohol wholesale providers, servicing over 1,600 customers to a central distribution centre and a company-owned fleet on a weekly basis. The company employs over 230 people at its state-of-the-art headquarters in Mallow, County Cork, and trading both nationally and internationally. It is responsible for 265 franchises under the Cost Cutter, Carry Out, Off-License and Quick Pick symbols, as well as a large number of independent retailers and wholesalers based in Ireland. Jim is an energetic business leader who has a passion to deliver superior customer service through his commitment and valued team. As an entrepreneur at heart, a passion of Jim's is fueling the entrepreneurial spirit in emerging Irish businesses. The Barry Group has been listed as one of Deloitte's best managed companies and has also been accredited with the Great Place to Work program. Jim, you are very welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Aidan. Good to be here.
I gave a brief description of the Barry Group there, but perhaps you could put a bit more flesh on the bones for us, you know, for those that may not know it.
Yeah, we're in the wholesale distribution business, and our key purpose is to help retailers make more money and help them to maximise their profitability in their business, like any business needs to maximise their profitability, which is challenging at the minute from a cost perspective. As you know, the cost of doing business is probably one of the greatest challenges in all businesses at the minute. And consumer confidence is probably challenged at the moment, which is impacting on the consumer spend. So our function is even more important. We have a very good track record of providing very good value for money. So we see ourselves as providing either a full business solution and supply chain to our Cost Cutter and Carry-Out customers, or we provide part supply chain solutions to our other customers, be it independent retailers, other wholesalers, key accounts, export customers. So in one sense, we've two separate selling channels, and it's supported by all our other business challenges. So when you put it all together, the model works very much, but it's about providing really high quality service and good value for money.
What do you think are some of the secrets to success in retail?
Okay, I think first of all, retailers really need to understand their consumers.
Okay.
That is really important. And then they tailor their business around their business potential, I'd imagine. And the worst thing someone can do is just take one model, and that model kind of goes across all retailers. Our belief is that every retailer is different. So when we sit down and talk with a customer about Cost Cutter or Carry-Out, we really look at the market and we look at the target audiences, and we tailor, while there's a lot of commonality, we tailor the offering. So in theory, the range offering could be quite different depending on the demographic. And I think also from a retailer point of view, it is how they engage with their staff. We're strong believers that you have to deliver a high quality consumer experience. You can only do that through an engaged staff, which leads into management, which is a hobby stroke passion of mine, that by providing high quality management, you create the environment for staff to give the consumer that experience which they need to have keep coming back. So a bit of a circle there, but they're very, very connected. But retailers need to be really good at managing their business. They need to be good at giving great service. And that's how they fuel their return on investment, because ultimately, for us long term, it's about a retailer enhancing the value of their asset. So ultimately, the more they get out of it. So it's
a simple symbiotic relationship.
Yeah, it's simple, but it's not simple.
Yeah.
You know, and we try and make our approach as simplistic as possible, but it's not simple. Mm. That makes sense.
Yeah. And then, you know, when you're looking at a new customer coming on, and are they approaching, say, listen, I've got a unit in wherever, I've got a unit, I want to make it a cost cutter. Will you kind of work with them from that very early stage about, you know, layout, what you should be doing? Because, you know, not necessarily everybody's going to have that skill set.
Absolutely. It's very hard for a retailer on their own to have all the different expertise that you would need to put a shop together. But the first thing for us is we'd meet the people and we'd say, are we compatible? Like, you know, we have a philosophy in business and you want people where you're some way connected. The next piece is, well, do we think that this site will work? Mm. And there's a lot of sites we look at, and if we believe the likelihood of success is not very high, we would say, we don't think that you should do this. So there's an honesty required at the start. And once you get that foundation in place, we can literally do, from the very start of a field, we can literally help a retailer bring it the whole way through a system and planning, store design, range management, the whole imagery that we have on, say, our business system. Mm. So we can bring someone from a blank page to a finished product. And I think that kind of service is really important, somebody setting out in retail, especially if they maybe have one or two outlets as opposed to a large number of outlets. That's an experience that they couldn't possibly have, the store planning experience and all these other, I suppose, ingredients to the whole offering that we give. Because, you know, we have 250, 260 simple customers, we can afford to have all these services in place.
Yeah. And is there much of a difference in terms of whether it's a carry out or a cost cutter?
There's quite a big difference. Right. The whole business model is quite different, because in carry out, you're trying to make money out of predominantly alcohol, which is a very tough thing.
Okay.
Whereas in a cost cutter or a convenience store, you have a lot more categories to play with. There are similarities, but they are quite different dynamic.
Yeah.
Quite different.
Okay. What do you think sets the Barry Group apart from its peers?
It's something that shouldn't.
Right.
That makes sense, right? For me, high quality service should be a given.
Right.
But I actually think since COVID, the standard of service has fallen back in an awful lot of industries, and especially the wholesale trade,
right,
where we specifically felt our whole thinking was that the level of service that retailers need is far higher now than what we would have been beforehand during COVID. And we've kept building layer and layer on that. So it sounds very simple and a little bit corny, but our actual team and the service that we deliver, in my opinion, is far superior to anything else out there because of the passion we have on our leadership, our management and our style and our culture. But the reason for it is to have us provide a superior service to our competitors to make our business successful. Mm. So it's not kind of a fad. It's a deliberate thinking on our behalf to have our model sustainable and around our thinking and feeling that if we have a superior team who literally just give better service and are well connected to something that we work very hard on, the output ends up being that you have customers who are just being serviced better.
And stay with you longer.
And of course, I would say it, but I genuinely believe that the level of service that we give our customers, the closeness, the relationships we build, that we're probably a small, large company. And that gives us an advantage against our larger competitors because we can be that more intimate. Like any of my customers can talk to me if they want.
Yeah.
That is very difficult.
You're in a bit more
companies.
Agile and nimble as well.
Whereas on the other side, all our managers are fully empowered to do. So in a sense, they don't need to talk to me, but I make a point of being in touch. So we work very hard on that people, that human touch. Like, people for me is everything, and we're big into partnership. So for me, the partnership between ourselves, our customers and our suppliers is really important. Mm. So I think the way we are and the style that we try and develop is actually... And maybe because the size we're at, we can do it where maybe others might like to and they couldn't to the same degree. So I think we're at a very good size. We're big enough to have very good value for money. And we're small enough then to be able to respond.
But you're not a bureaucracy.
No. Yeah. We're the anti to that. Like, you know, we're I suppose we're very clear on what we're trying to do. But on the other side, then we try and do it in the simplest the most simplistic way we can. We keep it simple. My belief is if you keep things simple, everyone understands. Mm. If you have a complex situation, people don't understand, or some people don't understand. So we work very hard in communication between our customers, our suppliers and our team, and we try and simplify what we do and communicate really well.
Mm. And is it an ever-evolving model? Like,
you're never there.
You're never there.
No, and that's probably a disease I have. You're always trying to better yourself. I would have played a reasonable amount of sport when I was younger, and I brought a lot of kind of sporting thinking to how we run our business and how you motivate your people, but you're never there. It would be, for me, it would be a very dangerous headspace to get into saying we're there now, we've it all sorted.
Yeah.
That would be a very dangerous, because the whole market changes so quickly, people change so quickly. So you have to really be on your game, open to change, continue to challenge what you're doing. At the minute, we actually run a kind of a 3-year strategic planning process, and we're on year 3, so we're finishing off the last one, and we're really planning our next 3 years. And we invest an awful lot of time in getting that right, and it keeps us on track. But everything's up for review.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the documents we do, we label them draft initially, so we get a good input from people. And we're very open to listening to our customers, our staff and our suppliers. And that openness actually also, I think, gives us an edge, because we don't have to be, well, this is our way or no way.
Yeah.
No, obviously you have to do what you believe is right, but we're open to listen. Mm-hmm. And I would hope that when good suggestions come, we're good at recognising mm-hmm. them. And if that improves what we're doing, we're always open to improve what we're doing.
And when you look at the growth trajectory of the business going forward, is it going to be driven by kind of converting, you know, retailers from that are maybe with other brands, or is it going to be new stores, do you think?
I think there'll be some new stores, but I think it'll be more converting. The funny thing is, you know, when you maybe attract a retailer from one simple group over to ourselves, what we normally hear is that, well, we thought what you said to us might or might not happen. We're a real strong believer on under-promising and over-delivering.
Okay.
Now, what we're under-promising is far superior to what people are getting. And any of the customers, I would challenge any of them, and I know they'd say that we don't over-promise. We absolutely deliver on what we say, which again is a very simple logic, but you'd be amazed the amount of over-promising that's done in the selling world.
Yeah.
Whereas that would nearly be a firing offence in our company. So anything we say, we have every intent of delivering on. If we get it wrong, we fix it quickly. You know, and little things like that make a huge difference. Mm-hmm. But when you're a larger organisation, it's harder.
Mm.
It's harder to actually achieve what are probably simple standards, or what should be simple standards. But they're not delivered very often. But they're things that we're passionate about. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, us delivering a high quality service for our customers, my biggest thing.
Mm.
Now, you can only do that if you have a really engaged, high performing team. So they go hand
in
hand.
From the top to the bottom.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we work very hard on leadership. We work very hard in management, and we try and live it.
Mm.
And we have a series of kind of meetings set up, and they're all planned meetings to achieve something. And we work very hard to deliver what we say we're going to deliver.
Okay.
Now, we're all for empowerment. That's great. But you didn't need to have measures in place. So we have a really strong suite of measures and controls in place to ensure we do what we set out to do.
Yeah.
And if we get it wrong, we fix it quickly.
The focus obviously remains retail. As far as I can see, you haven't necessarily gone down the food service end of that.
Well, we haven't, which is unlike most other wholesalers. And we've often looked at it. We've often thought about it. I wouldn't say never, but some of the thinking around it is that based around our supply chain.
Okay.
Our supply chain is based on delivering kind of multiple pallet, multiple combi orders. Whereas the food service is a different type of supply chain. And whenever we've looked at it, we felt that it might stretch our supply chain, because we're really happy with our supply chain and it works really well. And it's, again, it's a very important ingredient of what we do.
Mm.
And sometimes if you stretch something too much, you might mess up what you're doing. So I would say if we were to get involved in food service, it would probably be through an acquisition route, not through
trying to change what you've got.
And sometimes you can, you're trying to do everything at times. So we specialise in more that grocery, alcohol aimed at retailers. Yeah. Now, saying that, we would have a good relationship with a number of wholesalers who we supply.
Okay.
And they would supply then maybe food pubs food. And okay. food service.
Okay.
But ourselves, we choose not to.
Yeah.
Rightfully, wrongfully, I'm not sure. But every time I think
you're right to a certain extent. Like when you've got that supply chain is key. And the reason it's key is because the retailers need the reliability. And if you start stressing the supply chain, suddenly the reliability goes and you're starting to under-deliver to the core that you really want to keep.
Well, if I could, two or three important points. A truck leaves our yard that has to be emptied and ideally come home with a load in it.
Mm-hmm.
If you have too many small deliveries, that makes that very difficult.
Yeah.
And in the sustainable world that we're now going into, it's really important that you get those efficiencies and you try and have your trucks full both ways. The other piece, some of our competitors might agree a delivery time window with a retailer,
yeah.
but it might be a 4-hour delivery. So a truck might arrive where our delivery time is a 30-minute window.
Okay.
So therefore, because retailers would have staff waiting in the shop, waiting for an order to arrive.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if your delivery will arrive within 30 minutes at a time or 4 hours at a time, so little things like that have influenced our decision.
And the retailer might not have a whole lot of space for a truck to be pulling up and keeping space clear for 4 hours.
Yeah, a lot of them wouldn't.
Yeah.
And then like small deliveries by then, it's a different supply chain model. So I'm not saying never, but in our current supply chain model, it would mess us up probably, yeah. and it would impact on the service we give. And I think we do a 99.8% delivery on time. That is a very high standard. Mm-hmm. And those are the things that lead into us giving our customers a really good service. Yes. So I'd rather service what I have very good
yeah.
rather than be over-tempted and then our service standard dropping on current customers.
As I said in the intro, this was a business set up by your dad, right? And then you've had your whole career in it pretty much.
Yeah.
Talk to me about intergenerational businesses, right? So what was, and this is kind of a two-parter. What was the move for your dad to say, okay, I'm time to move to the left in terms of full time, you take it on? Talk to me through that whole period.
Yeah, well, look, it was a real family business at the time. He started off selling fruit and veg. He had previously sold ice cream for somebody else back in the early 50s. He could come back from England. He always had a wish to work for himself. And he started off in literally my grandmother's front room in a village called Bant here, 12 miles from Mallow. And he started off in a small way and he added on. And it was a real family business because I've got 6 other siblings and we all would have worked at some point of time, full-time, part-time, but every one of us would have done helping out. Yeah. That's how it worked back then. If it was a farming family, everybody helped out in the farm. In the small business, everybody helped out in the small business. He moved the business to Bantir then, to Mallow in the, I think it was late 60s. He bought what was, it was an old mill. KB Williams's were the company at the time. And obviously, I think it fell in poor times. And at their peak, they employed 100 people. And he always had an ambition that the business someday would employ 100 people. So he started off as cash and carry and other family members who were involved in the business at times. We kind of brought it to, I was probably under his feet from about 9 or 10 years of age, as the other guys were as well. So that's just what you did. I was delighted heading to work with my dad on a Saturday at 10 years of age, probably in his way under his feet. But you understand it. I was doing a relief sales for our fruit and veg guys at 14. No, my dad had a guy driving me, but I was doing the selling.
Yeah.
And you got exposed to all these type of things, which is invaluable lessons that you couldn't be exposed to.
Unless never mind about
it was
retail.
A family business. Now, I wasn't the brightest spark at school, but I had really good skills with people. So I was able to deal with maybe some retailers who others struggled with. I was able to go in maybe naivety and not see any danger, but I developed an ability to deal with almost everybody. And I joined the business full time then after school. I had a deal with my dad. If I passed the leaving cert, I could join the business. I passed the leaving cert. And I'd have done most of the tasks that would have been part of the business over the years I would have done. And like that was part of him, partly preparing me for the future. And my other brothers as well were in the business for a while. And then time moved on, opportunities bounced, we grabbed the opportunities. The business probably became a proper national player maybe late 80s, early 90s, and we kept building the business. I took over as MD early 2000s, and my dad would have always been there because we were very good friends. We got on very well. And up till COVID, actually, he used to come in every day. Mm-hmm. COVID, he was getting a bit elderly at that stage, and health was starting to fail. So once COVID came, he couldn't come in anymore. But, like, you know, he got a good run, and, you know, he loved coming in every day. And he actually added hugely to the whole dynamic, the people dynamic. Like, we have people who were in our working for us 35, 40 mm-hmm. years. Mm-hmm. And that's true. Relationships have been authentic. And I would hope that I would have built on his good values and the standards that he set. And obviously, you advance them on as time goes on. But we built up a very good business. I think a big change for us was maybe the early 90s when we got into the symbol group trading. We were really good at selling to large independent retailers. That was our strength. But they started disappearing because of the symbol groups coming in. Yeah. And we probably changed ourselves and developed our own symbol groups. And that probably brought us, and that was an important decision. If we hadn't made that decision, we would probably have been like most of the other wholesalers gone by today. Yeah. So we made some good decisions along the way at the right time. So there aren't too many wholesalers left. There was a large number of wholesalers 20 years ago. Most of them are gone now. So we're probably the third largest wholesaler at the minute in the market.
Mm-hmm. So it was fairly seamless then, the move from one generation to the next.
Yeah, and I'm now in a situation now where my three kids are working in the business.
Yeah, I was going to ask you. That was
Yeah, and look, I've learned an awful lot. It can be very difficult for family working together because everyone's wired differently, and that doesn't mean people are right or wrong. And one of my biggest missions now is to make sure that we have a harmonious environment for my three kids going forward. I'm still leading the business. The guys have got good roles in the business. Mm. My two daughters would have, they're on our senior team. My son has just joined the business. So I see a big part of my role now is to pass all the knowledge over to them, and hopefully that they'd be comfortable in a couple of years' time running the business without the need for me. Mm. Probably there's probably a need for me at the minute. Not saying that we have a very good team. We have very well-developed systems. But the transitioning to next generation can be very difficult. But as time goes on and you have a lot more experiences, like, it should be easier for me than my father. Because going back kind of 30 years ago when I had two other brothers in business, there was no planning, there was no corporate governance, there was no board meetings, there was no proper structure.
Yeah.
Whereas today now, I would have exposed myself to quite a lot of, you know, I'm quite involved in the Ernst Young Entrepreneur of the Year. You get great exposure to different programs and that. I got a lot of conferences, and I would keep myself very up to date. I've helped out in a few family disputes and family businesses. So I kind of know what can go wrong. Mm. So I'd be very hopeful that with what I've learned over time, that I'd be able to put together a very good model that my three kids in 10 years' time
can
work well together and can just drive on the business to another level.
Yeah. It is a very difficult within the family business context in that the business is always there. Like, there's no going, like, you go back to, you know, family dinner on a Sunday, the business is probably going to be talked about. Like, the place to be able to stop business and start family, if you will.
I think over time I probably got better.
Okay.
And I would try and let the business outside the house. Mm. It's only probably in recent years that I got better at that.
Right.
Because you probably need to develop an awareness of that. And quite honestly, most people in business are not aware. Something I work very hard on is my old self-awareness. And I think it's really important in leadership and in business. And I would have got much better at trying to get my balance right. I would have got better at letting the business discussion where it should be and not bring it where it shouldn't be. But still, it's a family business. If something goes wrong, it lands back in your desk. And you can't turn off really, but you need to learn not to be talking about it when you shouldn't be.
Have some sort of boundaries in terms of it.
You do, yeah. No. Was I a star pupil? Always no. I think I've got better at it.
Talk to me the difference between scaling a business and starting a business.
That's interesting because I'm involved in a group in Cork, Access BIC, who run a really good program called the Entrepreneur Experience.
Right.
It's actually on in October every year. And we, as part of a larger group of entrepreneurs, we provide advice to people starting off in business. So we do a 24-hour immersion where we have one-on-one sessions, group sessions, and it's all about trying to help people get their head right who are emerging in business. And the experience we have is when people emerging in business have had an opportunity to talk with people who've been in business for years and lots of experience, Davinta's on in Ballymaloe normally, and we meet actually in probably 9 o'clock Friday morning, and we've finished maybe at 2 o'clock on Saturday. And the participants normally leave with their headspace in a total different frequency.
Yeah.
And it's from the experiences gained, but starting off is very tough. Mm-hmm. My own view, it can take a couple of years for people to get their head above water. My observations over the years, I'm involved in that program for maybe 12 years now. My own observations, it's awful tough starting off. People work really hard. The reward can be quite poor in certain situations. Other people then can get a good break and kind of get investment in it, and it can get going. But starting off in business is very, very tough. Now, there are lots of supports and helps, and I think people should really be open to looking for support. There's loads of people out there who'll mentor you. There's places to go. There's great government supports. But trying to do it on your own, putting the head down, is not a wise scenario. There's lots of grants available. But I would suggest that people starting off really need to look for the help that's there, look for the supports, and get involved in the likes of the Entrepreneur Experience or other events like that. Get out and meet people. The biggest inhibitor at times is people themselves.
Yeah.
They're trying to do everything.
Oh, that's a good, as I often see that, I think it's a real major mistake that entrepreneurs make, that they think they need to be great at every facet of running the business. And there's no way you could possibly, even if you had 20 years experience, you wouldn't necessarily be great.
Entrepreneurs are flawed individuals, really. And look, I've been there trying to do everything, and really an entrepreneur needs to get to a place where they're a really good leader and that they can get really good processes and systems in place. And not every entrepreneur can do that. So an entrepreneur needs to probably be honest with themselves, know their strengths, and surround themselves with people who will make up for their shortcomings, because nobody has it all.
Yeah.
But I think self-awareness is probably one of the biggest things when you're at the early stage. Encouraging people to be honest with you and tell you things. You know, if someone says, I screwed up, and you're going to react badly, they're not going to keep coming telling you. Little things like that you need to know what's going on. And no matter you're in a small business starting off or a large business, you need to make sure staff are engaged. You need to make sure there's really good service going on. You need to make sure you're making money, there's controls. And you need to have time to, you can't do them all.
Yeah.
But you need to kind of offload stuff off your desk and I suppose identify what's important, where your time should be. And I've seen people, they're awful busy doing the wrong things as well. So as you get more experienced, obviously you learn these lessons, but in the entrepreneur experience we do, it's great to, there's a lot of successful business people very willing to share their experiences to give people a leg up, because everyone's got a leg up at some stage.
It's funny with all of these ones that I do, I think it's a particularly Irish thing that there's very few cases I've ever seen where somebody picks a phone up and asks somebody, listen, could I meet you for a cup of coffee? And they say no, right? It just never, like, I don't know whether it's the Irish mentality or everybody's always willing to give you a hand.
Like, most people have got a leg up themselves along the way, and most of the people I know in business would gladly help somebody. It's often the confidence to make the phone call is the issue, or I can't ask him. No, you need to get an introduction.
Yeah.
But like, if someone's anyway half clever, I think we're a very decent nation.
Yeah.
I think there's an awful lot of goodwill, and I think everyone likes to see people kind of doing okay. My experience, and in the event I'm involved in now, there'll be 30-odd entrepreneurs, some very successful people that you couldn't get access to They're all going to be there.
Willing to give their time.
And I think, experience is something that you kind of have to gain in one sense. But if you have people who are going to share their experience, they shorten that learning enormously.
Yeah.
And it's one of the things I do, and I find it very rewarding myself. But it's nice to be able to help people too.
Customers are great at telling you what's wrong with a product or service, but not necessarily telling you how to solve it. So how do you square that and get it to work for you?
Yeah, well, look, I think you need to have know-how. Right. And I think companies really need to be expert in the business that they're in. Mm-hmm. So we need to have the answers. So we would make a point of employing good quality people who understand our business. Now, we go to a very good length to be absolutely clear on what is the ask of our people. Mm-hmm. And it's all about equipping our people to be able to meet the needs of our customers. So we would say in our Costco and carryout business now, our account managers, that's more an advisory role.
Okay.
Of course, you listen to a customer, but you need to bring the solutions to the table even before the customer is asking. Now, if the customer brings up something, and you will deal with it, obviously, but you need to get ahead. Mm. We have a very good understanding on how a Costco store should be run, how a carryout store should be run. Some of our key accounts, then we'd have a very good understanding of what would sell for them. So we would bring opportunities to the table. This should sell for you. And our commercial approach is obviously a combination of marketing, buying and sales. But we have the guys working very close together. So we build a very good understanding of what is needed for Costco and carryout, but also our key accounts. We know what will work for them.
Yeah.
No, every store is different and you listen, you respond, but you should know the vast majority even before the customer has a problem.
Yeah. Do you obsess about the small things?
What drives me nuts is the recurrent small problems.
Yeah.
If you bring me a crisis, I'm the calmest man in the room because I believe you need to have, in order for your brain to work at its most effective, you need to be calm.
Mm.
And I have the ability to be the calmest man in the room, which is really important in my job. But what does drive me nuts is the recurrent small stuff. Mm. I have to apologise. That's the one thing.
You know, listen.
And you might say, Jim, they're small. But I think if something is really recurrent, that can drive a customer nuts. You get away with a small thing once.
Yeah.
But if you have a customer and something small happens 3 or 4 times in a row,
then it's not a small thing for them.
And I am just passionate about great customer service.
Yeah.
Because that's something we can be the best at. Like, you need to find things that you're the best at. It's very hard. But in my opinion, we're the best at that service piece. So I'm passionate about remaining there. Yeah. And I want to expand the difference between us and our competitors rather than reduce it. So that detail, I've learned to respond really well. But under my skin, that's the piece that a recurring small thing. Yeah. So what we do, whenever something goes wrong, we encourage strong open debate. We encourage people to talk about it. But it's really about learning to not repeat it so the customer doesn't have that experience again with us.
And do you think that's the key element of the culture in the Barry Group?
I'm very fortunate with the team we have.
Okay.
We have a very good leadership team. And as a result, we do good hires. We have a good environment. We treat people well. So that is our people are our magic sauce.
Mm.
But we set out for it to be that way.
Yeah.
And as long as we can keep willing volunteers coming to work, happy to come in, the vast majority of our people are good people doing a very good job.
Yeah.
Our percentages are very good.
Yeah.
So therefore, our chance of giving great customer service, it goes up on the back of that.
Yeah. And how much control do you think management have over the culture?
Enormous.
Yeah,
okay. It's the right of the CEO stroke the leadership team to very much state the culture that they want and define it.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely dependent on the managers to bring that to life.
Yeah.
That would be one of our... For me, I am trusting our managers to treat our team the way I want them treated. Now, that sounds simple, but it's not. You're continually fine-tuning what to do. You're giving feedback. We do staff surveys, which tells us really how the managers are treating people. And you want it right for the manager. You want it right for the team. But I suppose my bottom line is I need everybody wanting to come to work. So people need to be treated fairly with respect. You got to listen to them, take on board what they're saying, but you must do the right thing as well. A lot of people want to be acknowledged and listened to. Now, they may come with something, and if it can be taken on board, great. And if it can't, you explain why.
Why? Yeah.
Communication is a huge part of it.
We talked about the food service earlier on, but you know, with success that you've had, there's always a risk of distraction that you're kind of, you get more money and you decide to go down a road that is or into another area that just, you should never do it. How do you balance that desire to, you know, have you ever looked at a fourth, you know, we have the cost cutter, we have the carry out. Is there a fourth leg to this stool?
I think there should be.
Okay.
In time. And we looked at one project recently and it just didn't happen. That would have been different. Mm-hmm. But like the fundamentals for us, we're very good at supply chain. We're good commercially. Mm-hmm. So if you have those two pieces in place, you should be able to add another solution. So we would be open, if I could put it like that. And I suppose you got to be careful not to go chasing after everything.
Yeah.
And for me, we've got a strong financial function. We have a strong IT function. We have a strong supply chain. So I'd be open to looking at something that could fall in within those.
Yeah.
I'd
not put stress on the infrastructure that's there already.
If I was in a situation now where I couldn't find more staff, which is not the case, I wouldn't be adding any more in.
Right.
We're lucky in our location in Mallow that even at times there when there was a big squeeze on in staff numbers, we were able to have full staff numbers the whole way through, which was, again, an advantage on our competitors.
Yeah.
Because during 21, 22, 23, a lot of people really struggled to have enough warehouse staff. And then they brought in agency staff and the standards fell.
Yeah.
We were able, apart from that sharp period during COVID when the scheme was in place where you couldn't get staff. Apart from that period, we had a reasonably full complement of staff the whole way through.
Has fear of failure ever been a driving force for you?
I suppose in one sense, when it comes to risk, right, I'm not in for high risk. I would say ourselves, we're up for medium risk.
Right.
Because I don't see why I'd gamble everything on the table. But you have to, you have to be up for risk. I think as time goes on, experience, that tells you kind of the chances are, will something work or not? I don't believe that as a business that we should be into high risk at this stage. We have too many things going for us. We have a strong balance sheet. We have good turnover. We have good customer loyalty. We have good staff. If I was looking at a risk register, it's medium. Medium risk is where our appetite is. High risk, we don't need to.
You mentioned over and over and over again about people and how important people are. So where are you on the hiring talent or developing from within?
Both.
Right.
I think it's both. I think, if it's a very senior role, you probably rather do that from within because of the importance of culture and style. Now, if you came across somebody who you knew had that culture and style, that removes the risk because culture and style is just so important to us. But we would be, at the minute now, we would have succession plans in most of our roles already in place. As a policy, you will go external as well, but you like to try and provide an opportunity. And as a business, we believe we can grow our business substantially in the next 3 or 4 years. So we've already identified
what you need
future managers from within, actually.
Okay.
So we have some people going through programs. There's other people who'll be going through other programs. So succession planning is a big thing for us. But on the other side, I think you'd be foolish not to bring in outside talent as well.
Have you had many what I would call boomerangs start with you, they go off to do other stuff and they ultimately end back in with you?
Not so many. Because I know some companies have a policy of trying to encourage that.
Yeah.
The financial world now, I know one or two companies who they have almost an alumni for ex-employees and they find it successful. Doesn't tend to happen with us.
How do you deal with setbacks?
I think you look in my world, you've a lot gone right and your stuff gone wrong the whole time. Mm-hmm. Something going wrong, you deal with it and you get over it and you move on. Mm-hmm. I'd be a glass half full man rather than half empty. I know coming into work every week, there's going to be issues to be dealt with. Everything will not go right. And you just deal with stuff as it comes and you move on. Mm-hmm. That would be, I'd be of a positive disposition. So I'm not going to let things drag me down, bother me. I'll be moving on to the next thing. Because luckily in our world, there's loads of positive things. There's loads of opportunity. No, you must deal with the negative stuff. But I don't let it bother me. Mm-hmm. I just, and that's maybe over time, you know.
Yeah. Do you get back to the shop floor much? Do you get back to the meeting and greeting and that bit much?
If I'm honest, a reasonable amount, but it's probably there's a time since you prefer you were doing that.
Yeah.
But I can't. I would meet customers regularly.
Right.
We just had a conference there early October. And it's a great opportunity to meet. We had 160 people customers attending our conference. And we also had an awards night and we had 280 people attending our awards night. So we had suppliers and customers in our team. So I met a load of people. Mm. I'll always take the opportunity to meet as many people as I can. I will try and be out on the road meeting people. I don't do it as much as I'd like, but I do it a fair amount. Like today now, I'll be meeting three customers today. I try and...
Does it energise you when you meet the customers?
Oh, yeah, I love it. As a supplier, I love meeting people.
Yeah.
Because you'll normally walk away with something different and that's probably... Do you know the piece you're never there, right?
Yeah.
It's when you're out meeting people, you're getting your next idea, you're seeing something. Like when I'm today in Dublin, I'll pop into one or two stores, in your stores, seeing what's there and just... I have a continual ambition to keep improving. In our warehouse, then, I make a point to walk in our warehouse on a regular basis. I'll walk it a couple of times a week and meet the lads. I'd know most of the guys in the warehouse. But again, so I'd feel I have a good relationship with most of the guys and a good bond with them. So that's all part of what just makes our guys take a bit more care. Yeah. I think we care more, if that makes sense, than our competitors. But I'd work very hard on that people piece. And it doesn't matter if someone driving the truck, someone in our warehouse or our sales guys, I would try and know as many of them as I can.
Yeah. What personal characteristic do you think is most important as the CEO or the boss of the business?
I think honesty with self.
Right. Okay.
I think some people I know in business now, and they actually think they're rock stars and they're wrecking people's heads.
Yeah.
You need to be good with people. For me, I'm all for a positive environment, but you must call things out as well. Mm. But you call things out in a constructive way. Emotional intelligence is very important. Like everyone is different, so you treat people differently. I certainly go out to try and get things done in a positive way. You can have a conversation with somebody, deal with something difficult without having the falling out.
Mm.
So I'd always try and do things in a sensitive way because you never know what's going on in someone's head.
Yeah.
You never know. Yeah. So I think fairness is a word we use regularly. We try and be fair to everybody.
Yeah.
But you want fairness back then as well.
Yeah, yeah.
It has to go both ways.
Yeah.
Loyalty goes both ways as well.
Yeah. Do you hate losing or love winning?
Is it an or question?
Well, it can be both. It can be both. An awful lot of people can't find it. I'm not sure what the difference is. But
I must say...
So I'll almost link it and say, do you then celebrate your wins as much as you should?
We actually encourage celebration a lot. Like we try and find people doing things good.
Right.
That's one of the mantras of our people. We'll always try and, like if anything good happens, we encourage our managers to send a mail and copy people. So if I meet someone in the car, geez, well done last week. Or we it's all about the positive. No, there's no point. You can't pretend something is positive when it's not.
No,
but we always try and find people doing things well.
Yeah, okay.
And luckily there's lots of stuff going on. Well, some of our people do incredible things at times. Mm. But it's important that the management team know, the leaders know, and you say, thank you. Mm. Little things like that. I get over loss. I get over it. I don't do well. I move on. Because you're not going to win every trick.
Yeah.
But I do like them when they're successes. I believe they should be celebrated by everybody involved.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to decision making, are you a fast or a slow decision maker?
I'm slowing down.
Slowing down.
I would have been guilty of making decisions too quick. as in there on the spot. And I would have brought a policy in the last 2 or 3 years. Or not, lads, give me time to think about this. And I always liked to sleep in for 24 hours. And I find you end up making a better decision. So people would say speed of decision is great. For me, and for me only, making an impulsive decision, you get most of them right, but you get some wrong. So I deliberately have said, oh, okay, no. There's an obvious thing you can say yes, but if something requires a bit of thought, I like 24 hours before I give the nod.
And then when it comes to that, are you a data-based or a gut-based decision maker?
Both. No, you need both. I'm a strong believer that you need both.
Right.
I think gut is very important. And I have friends who are gut-based and I have friends who are data-based. I try and be both.
Both, yeah.
I think both's very important.
Yeah. You make the gut decision based off the data that you've got.
Yeah, like, I won't make a decision. I'd have a gut say we're doing this, but I want to see the numbers to make sure, does this stand up? Say if we're looking at a new retail store and it looks good, well, that's what's expected to turn over tomorrow. You want to see P&L first before you push a button. It's a balance of both, in my opinion.
When it comes to growth, organic or acquired, what do you think for your businesses is relatively easier or also relatively more successful?
Again, up till now it has been more organic.
Okay.
But we're going into a phase now where it'll be both.
Okay.
We have acquisition ambitions, and that will probably be evident very shortly. The plan is both now. Right. We're going to move on.
And do you think you're going to need to develop a new set of skills around that?
I think if we stay in our current sector, I think our skills are pretty okay. But again, you need to be up in your skills anyway every year. Because if you think we're there, it's not something that we believe in. But again, as a business, we brought our learning development in-house.
Okay.
So my daughter, Amy, would lead our people and culture. So in-house now, we're running all our own learning development. So we have a continual learning development going on in order to keep up in the bar. That's how we are in control of that we're happy that our management is happening to a standard. We found in the past you might have some outside people coming in and they might not fully understand your style and culture.
Yeah.
So it's the fit with our style and culture is critical. So we certainly have seen in the last 3 or 4 years our management effectiveness rising because of it's in-house and it's consistent. The cultural piece is just probably the foundation of an awful lot of what we do, and we want the consistency.
And will that make the acquisition? That'll make the acquisition harder because you'll be looking for targets who have similar, not exactly the same, but similar cultures.
Ideally, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. To be fair, I think because of our scale, we can probably bring in expertise to maybe. If we're looking at someone of a smaller and we're bolting on, I think we can bring a lot of improvement or enhancements to the table. I think we'd be able to bring superior customer service and a number of things to the table. That's what we're looking at the minute. Mm. But on the other side, we're certainly going to explore doing something totally different.
Okay. What advice would you give to young people today?
In business?
In business, in life. Careers and whatever.
Oh, that's a difficult one. I think younger people behave way differently to how we behaved in our day, and I think things are changing. But I think young people will need to be prepared to contribute to a decent standard, do a good day's work for a fair day's pay, and they're going to have to, while companies are adjusting their culture and style as much as they can, I think younger people are going to have to ultimately go with the culture and style of a company as opposed to the way they want to do it. And their challenge is to find a company or a business that matches what they want to do. But companies are not going to be able to completely change around an individual's style or demands of how to do a certain thing. So I think there needs to be give and take. Younger people are going to have the same needs as we have, in that you have to earn a salary, you're going to want to try and get a house and all these type of things, and they're going to have to adapt and meet the needs of the employer at a point in time. we don't experience it, but you hear things at times. Some companies are finding it very hard to meet the needs of younger employees. I think that's a very dangerous journey. And I think while employers have to give a certain amount, the younger people are going to have to
meet
as well.
Them halfway.
I think so, yeah.
How do you feel about what you've done already in the company?
This sounds corny now, but a lot done, no more to do. Somebody else said that, and I'm not sure. I'm
not a million miles from this place.
No, we have a lot done. Like, we have a very decent business that I'm very proud of. We have a really great team of people. But funny, the better you get, you probably realise how much better you can be.
Yeah.
And we're currently, we have our plans signed off now for the next 3 years, and we have very ambitious plans in place. And we can certainly keep enhancing our leadership and management effectiveness. We can enhance our offering to our customers. We can do a better job. I'm confident that we can do acquisitions and grow our business. So I'd be very happy that my three kids will take the business to another level. And their influence is currently decent, but that'll be a rising influence over the next couple of years, I think. We have a lot going right, but you've always have to have the ambition to actually drive on to the next level. And I'd be very confident that we will drive our business on to another level pretty quickly.
And therefore, what gets more credit for the success, hard work or luck?
I think you make your luck.
Yeah. By working hard.
Hard work. Is it in sport, the more you practice, the luckier you get, is it?
Yeah.
Hard work is a very important ingredient. I like working hard. I like commitment. Some people who can, in our business, you actually need hard work in our sector. There's other sectors where maybe you mightn't. If anything, I'd say the balance probably needs to be adjusted, and the effort I put in, probably is not realistic for my kids.
Mm.
Life is moving on, and I probably put an effort in that today's generation wouldn't, nor would I expect. But I think clever work is probably where we need to get to. In hindsight, could I have done things clever and more effective? Probably, with the benefit of hindsight. So to learn from that. So I think effective cleverness, I think management and leadership is becoming way more important now. Yeah. Clever leaders, getting stuff done through people rather than yourself.
Effective and efficient management.
What happens actually is that people in medium-sized businesses, and we've been a medium-sized business up till recently. We're now probably a small, large business. But if you're a hands-on owner, you probably are not getting the amount of time that you should into the strategy and planning. You're probably doing that on a Saturday and Sunday. So the right thing to do is put your time into the strategy and planning, and then you will have time for the other stuff then. But I think it kind of goes the other way around sometimes. And we've got much better now at getting that split right. We put a lot of time into our planning and strategy. But if you get that part right, you didn't have more time for that other bread and butter stuff.
Yeah. Right. We've come to the final question. Let me open the book and see where we are. Keep your fingers crossed, Jim. Oh, actually, this is very apt. This is very apt. This is very, this is a good one for you, right? This is a good one for you. What other industry do you think you could be successful in?
I think I could be successful in any business where there's a good people involvement. I think business skills are kind of generic enough. While you'd have to build the knowledge, I actually think what's really important is the ability to get on with people. When I say people, I say your staff, your customers, your suppliers. Mm-hmm. So I believe I have a skill to get on with people. I think I have a good level of common sense. I can smell the coffee. I can read a room. I have good emotional intelligence. And what I'd have to do is just build the skill base then for any other
business. I
think most successful business people, while they're in an industry, I actually think that they could be in any industry. Maybe I'm deluding myself, but I actually think you could be on the basis of having that foundation of your kind of good leadership skills, the ability to get on with people. Yeah. I think that's a huge thing.
Yeah. I disagree.
Yeah. I think that's probably one of the most important things. Like, you could have a genius there and can't get on with people.
Yeah.
And funny part of the entrepreneur experience that I've been involved in over the years, we've seen people with some fantastic ideas, but the ideas don't go outside their garden shed because they haven't the ability.
I think, and I've said it loads of times on this, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what the industry is, people do business with people.
Absolutely.
Plain and simple. And if you can't master that, it doesn't matter how good your mousetrap is, you're never going to sell a mousetrap.
And again, and you have the underlying skills then for that. You have the emotional intelligence, you can listen, your brain works in a fairly tight way. If you can, again, it's not rocket science. It's actually, it's simple enough stuff that is not awfully common at times.
Well, that's it for this episode of Everyday Business with Aidan Donnelly. I'd just like to thank my guest, Jim Barry. Don't forget to like, share, subscribe or comment if you enjoyed what you heard. Many thanks, and we'll see you next time.
The participants in this podcast have done so for the purpose of sharing their own individual business experiences. Some are clients of Davy and some are not. They have not received a gratuity or other payment for their time in making the podcast. The views expressed throughout are their own. Warning: the information in this podcast is not a recommendation or investment research. It does not purport to be financial advice. You should speak to your advisor in the context of your own personal circumstances prior to making any financial or investment decision. In the Republic of Ireland, J&E Davy Unlimited Company, trading as Davy and Davy Private Clients, is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland. Davy is a Davy Group company and also a member of the Bank of Ireland Group. In the United Kingdom, Davy Private Clients UK, Davy UK and Davy Capital Markets UK are the trading names of J&E Davy UK Limited. J&E Davy UK Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. J&E Davy UK Limited is a Davy Group company and also a member of the Bank of Ireland Group.